Jerry Pippin. And hello, this hour we're going to take a break from politics and all that other exciting stuff and go fishing. The vacation season for most of us is almost over, so I thought it would be fun to do a show on incredible fishing stories. And on the line from Sausalito, California, is the author of the book Incredible Fishing Stories, Sean Morey. Now, of course, personally, I'm not much of a fisherman. Sean Morey, how are you, Sean?
Doing fine, Jerry. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Now, I mean, this book is true, right? These fish stories you've checked out?
These are the world's most exciting and incredible and true fishing stories. They're verifiable. I corroborated them and checked them out, and I wouldn't have put them in there if they were lies. That'd be too easy.
I guess you could just sit down. I don't know if you could sit down and think of some of these things.
Some of them are pretty amazing. Yeah, there's some things that happen out there. You know the old adage, truth is stranger than fiction. It really is true. You never know. You're out there and you're fishing, and half the time you don't know what you're going to catch, especially if you're out in the ocean. And you'd be amazed at the things that can happen out there.
Now, you live in Sausalito, California. I know you were in Florida in January, and your book is available.
And the distributors are now picking it up, and it should be available at bookstore and tackle shop. Certainly order it with plenty of time for Father's Day. So that's what we're really shooting for.
Now, most of these fishing stories, are they dealing with saltwater fishing?
Most of them are saltwater. There's everything from the angler who caught the marlin on the surfboard down in Mexico to the battle on a salmon.
He caught a marlin on a surfboard?
Yeah, you know.
You mean he wasn't even fishing?
Well, actually, he was. It's my favorite story in the book, and what had happened was this angler was down off of Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, with some friends, and they were a couple of miles offshore, and they were dead boat fishing. They were just drift fishing. They had some live bait out, and they were hoping to pick up a marlin. And suddenly they had not one but two marlin hit at the exact same time, but one of them hit off the back of the boat and went in one direction, and the other fish hit off the front of the boat where the angler, another angler, was standing and went in the opposite direction. And when you catch one of these big fish, the captain of the boat needs to follow the fish, or it's
that'd be a little difficult with them going different directions.
Oh, exactly. And he wanted to catch both of them, and he couldn't go both directions, so he ran down into the galley and brought up what turned out to be a windsurf board without the sail. And he tossed it overboard, and the angler at the front was courageous, or I guess crazy enough to jump on. And he put a life preserver on and straddled this board, and he went straight out to sea. This marlin actually dragged him out to sea. They were moving about probably 3 miles an hour, and the boat left him, went the other direction, and just tried to keep in touch with binoculars. Actually lost sight of him a couple of times. And
I was going to say, now the other boat's going the other direction because he's got a marlin on the front of the boat, right?
Exactly. And the guy on the surfboard, he's on his own, and they leave him. And he's going, rather than going toward shore, of course, he's already a couple of miles offshore, he continues, this marlin is heading out for deeper water.
Well, I'm sure.
And pulling him straight out with him, and it's an incredible story. And they came back, the boat caught their own marlin about an hour after they left him, and they returned. And when they got back to him, he had brought this 150-pound striped marlin all the way up to the board. The marlin was exhausted after pulling him around, and he proceeded to tag and release it from the board. It's on videotape and everything.
We have more fish stories. Incredible Fishing Stories is the name of the book, and Sean Morey is our guest. I'm Jerry Pippin. Sean?
Yes.
Are you a fisherman?
I am a fisherman. I love to fish. I've been fishing since I was probably about 2 years old. At least that's the photograph that my mom gave me, and I'm holding a fishing rod. I'm about 2 years old, but I love to fish, and I love to write, and love hearing the best fishing stories wherever I go, and that's how it turned into Incredible Fishing Stories, the book.
You alluded to me that now that people know you collect fishing stories, you're really getting a lot of them.
I sure am, but I'd love to hear from anybody out there, and I can talk to them and try to get them in the next book, as long as it's incredible and it's true.
Now, the book, Incredible Fishing Stories.
It's available in most bookstores, tackle shops. I was going to say there's lots of stories in here, too, and they're not all saltwater. There are some freshwater, and it pretty much runs from all over the world. There's an awful lot of them from the United States and both coasts, but there's also some from Australia and New Zealand and then, of course, Hawaii and Mexico. Anywhere where there's good fishing, I've gotten some stories.
Talking about Australia and marlin together, this fellow is pretty lucky that nothing happened to him on the surfboard, right?
Oh,
I mean, that could have been pretty dangerous.
It sure could have, and I don't know if he would do it again, but it was one of those spur-of-the-moment things, and the excitement is high, and captain throws it over, and he just kind of went over and did it, and he was okay. There's a lot of sharks, especially down when you get to a few miles offshore in warm water, and he had thought about sharks at one point and said he picked his feet up out of the water to put on top of the board, and was, of course, as soon as he did that, he started to lose his balance and almost catch on it and decided that it'd be more dangerous to fall off and have this big marlin pulling you around than it would be to stay on, and so he didn't think about sharks anymore. But yeah, he was lucky.
I guess one man actually was injured while fishing for a marlin in one of your stories.
Australia. Yeah, there. In fact, there's quite a few stories where a fish will come in a boat or an angler, a deckhand will go overboard and things of that sort, and there are some injuries that can happen, but. That particular story, that's one of the funnier stories in the book, and this was an American angler who's over in Australia fishing off of Cairns and the Great Barrier Reef, and he's going for his very first big fish of his life, and he suddenly finds himself hooked up to about an 800-pound black marlin, a very nice fish, and the fight's been going for a while, and when you fight these big fish, especially fish of that size, you're locked on to the reel by a harness, and it's like a vest that goes around your back or your shoulders, and it locks you on, and then you're in a big chair. It's kind of like a dentist chair, and you can swivel back and forth, and that's locked down, and everything's locked on, so you're there. Well, he, after this battle had been going for a while, the fish suddenly stopped, and this angler, not knowing any better, stood up in the chair, which you're not supposed to do, and, of course, the captain didn't notice that they were all looking at this big fish that had stopped. And when he stood up, he jerked back on the rod, which dug the hook in this fish's mouth and spooked him, and the fish didn't like that, and 800 pounds of black marlin decided to head for China or the bottom of the ocean, and that's an awful lot of force, and that pulled this angler forward, and he came to rest on top of the rod and reel, and if you've ever seen one of those big reels when they start spinning and you've got a big fish taken off, they get going so fast that they actually smoke, they get that hot, and the reel happened to land in his groin area.
Right, so he had a sex change operation right there.
He did. It burned right through his underpants and into his private parts. It was really not a very good situation. They couldn't get him back up. That marlin was going so fast and the pressure...
He didn't let go. Well, he couldn't let go. He's in a harness.
He couldn't let go. So there he was and screaming and screaming, and they couldn't do anything about it. They had to wait for the fish to stop, and the fish finally did stop, and they got him back up, and he was okay. He had some blisters and some burns, and believe it or not, the fish was still there, and they brought it in a couple hours later, and this angler was nice enough to tag and release this 800-pound marlin. Didn't even kill it after he had...
You mean after all of that, and he let it back. I guess a lot of fishermen just fish for the sport, don't they?
Well, they do, and that's picking up more and more now. It's these fish are magnificent fish, and most billfish aren't very good to eat anyway, and in fact, most fish all over the world are exploited, and there aren't that many of them left, and so a lot of sport fishermen are releasing their catches, and hopefully going to catch them again one day when maybe they're a little bit bigger. So, yeah, more sport involved now than just killing them.
A little bit bigger than 800 pounds? How big does a marlin get?
They get pretty big. In fact, the biggest fish ever caught on rod and reel was 1,800 pounds, and that's a marlin out of Hawaii. Now, it was not a legal catch, so it's not a world record because it took two or three fishermen to catch it.
Well, I can understand that.
Yeah, it was big. Now the legal record is 1,560 pounds, and that was one angler, and that was a black marlin down off of South America. But they get
with a rod and reel, huh?
On a rod and reel. And in fact, while we're talking about these kind of records, let me ask you, what do you think the longest battle ever is with one angler and one rod, one fish? Now the angler can't rest, can't put the rod down, he can't go to the restroom or anything like that. It's a nonstop battle.
I tell you what we'll do here. Let's stop and take a break while our audience ponders that. We're looking for the longest one man one fish fight.
How many hours legal battle?
We'll get somebody here at the Keith Ramsey at Studio Control. He's got a guess. Yeah. How long do you think the battle went? We're trying to for the folks. We're trying to find out how many hours the longest one man one fish fight lasted.
I don't know. I'm hoping it's going to be around 9 hours, but if it's any longer than that, I don't think anybody could last that long.
I don't think he was close, was he, Sean?
He wasn't even close.
No, he wasn't close.
the battle lasted for 37 hours.
37 hours?
37 hours, and it was not one of these giant marlin or huge sharks. Believe it or not, it was a salmon, and it was up in Alaska in the Kenai River up there, and after 37 hours, they lost the fish.
Wait a minute. He battled 37 hours for a 100-pound salmon, which, you know, that's a pretty good little fish, but it's
sure.
certainly not an 800- or 1,500-pound fish like we've been talking about, and it got away.
And it got away, and, you know, that's kind of what fishing is all about. You never know, but what a disappointment to go for 37 hours and to have no help or anything at all. And they actually had this salmon right up to the banks of the river, and there were TV crews and camera crews and hundreds of people lining the banks. It was something.
Well, they had plenty of time there to get a good coverage on it, didn't they?
They sure did, and in fact they had it cornered. They had it. They had a net on each side of it, and what happened was the fishing line touched the net and snapped, but they still had this fish cornered. And as they went to scoop it up, there were some rocks along the bottom of the river there, and the rocks hit the net and it pushed the boat backwards, and there was a strong current, and it just swept this big giant 100-pound world record salmon right around the net and into the dark water, and it was a sad moment for everybody but the fish. So that fish, who knows, maybe he'll come back a 200-pounder, but that's one heck of a battle. He got into the Guinness Book of World Records there for the longest all-time legal battle on rod and reel.
And it was a legal battle. He lost.
he did lose it. And in fact, while we're talking about the Guinness Book, there's also a story in here where an angler caught 3,000 bass in 3 months. He's from New York, and he broke every record, smashed them all to pieces, and ended up also getting into the Guinness Book of World Records for the most fish caught in one season. And I talked to him and interviewed him and wrote his story, and it still amazes me that anybody can catch that many fish in 3 months, and I think he only missed 2 days of work. So I don't know. That's a lot of fishing.
Boy, he must not sleep at all.
Yeah, he's a hardcore fisherman. Boy, he was out there fishing. I think he caught one fish 6 different times, in these lakes.
You would think, that was a question I was going to ask you. You would think that these fish, once they get hooked like that, they'd learn.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. I don't understand it. But in fact, some of the stories in the book are these remarkable odds, things that you just can't believe could happen.
I want to find out about these odds you were talking about. We're smack dab in the middle of an exciting program about fishing. I know you think fishing is great relaxation, and I guess it is, but not the way Sean Morey writes about it in his book, Incredible Fishing Stories. We have Sean on the line from Sausalito, California, and he's been telling us about some great tales. About Sean, we're talking about some incredible odds. We've been talking about the West Coast, basically. We have a lot of, most of our affiliates are on the East Coast, and I'd like to find out, you got any East Coast stories?
There's a lot of East Coast stories from Florida all the way up to Massachusetts, and there's good fishing over there, there's great fishing over there, and in fact, I'm tracking down a number of stories right now for the next book over there.
Now, you don't take anybody's word for it, you actually try to find witnesses, and so you're an investigative fishing reporter.
Absolutely, you got to. It's too easy for fishermen to embellish a little bit or to, you know.
Well, that comes with the territory.
It sure does, but I try to verify it as best I can by, I corroborate and track down whoever's involved. And I also check a lot of things through the International Game Fish Association, which is right there in Florida. And they're the governing body of sport fishing worldwide. And
right, you were in Florida during January. It just happened to be the season. And I was kidding you on the phone about that, but you actually had some business to take care of too, right?
I did. I was down there promoting the
sure.
book and talking to some fishermen and enjoying it and talking to fish clubs and picking up some great stories that I'm working on for the next book. There's some excellent great fishing out of the East Coast and a lot of diehard fishermen over there. You got some good weather and some good water out there.
What about the odds? What about the odds? You said there were incredible odds involved in some of these stories.
There are things. You've got anglers going overboard, rods going overboard with a fish on, and then somebody on the other side of the boat snags the rod and on a hook, and up it comes, and the fish is still on there. And there's stories like that in the book of 165-pound tuna that yanked the rod overboard and then was later snagged by somebody else on the other side of the boat, and then person that lost the rod got his rod back and got the fish back. And in fact, there's a story out of Florida where down in Key West, Florida, and these guys are out fishing, and they're fishing for dolphin fish or dorado, mahi-mahi. Those are all the same fish. And the water's so clear over there, and one of the guys flips a dime overboard to watch it go down through the water and see how far he could watch it go down, when suddenly a school of dolphin fish come through, and they start catching these dolphin fish, and there's thousands of these dolphin fish, and I think they caught five or six of them, and then they went elsewhere to catch other fish, and they got back at the docks, and they filleted up the fish, and the first fish they cut open, they checked its stomach, and inside...
Don't tell me the dime was there.
The dime was there. It's the same dime they had thrown over. But probably out of all these remarkable odds and remarkable catches, one of my favorites has got to be the marlin that was caught down in the Sea of Cortez by a couple of anglers. They tagged the fish with a tagging identification number and released the fish, and then a storm came through, and they had to go back to the hotel for 5 or 6 days, and they went back out to another part of the ocean in the Sea of Cortez, and they caught their same marlin. And these marlin travel to Hawaii and up to California and all over the world, and there's millions of square miles of ocean and tens of thousands of billfish, and they actually caught their same marlin 5 days later. And the odds are staggering. I couldn't.
That would have to be, I guess, one out of every how many fish there are.
Yeah, and especially since the fish are pelagic and they move all over the place. And it's tough enough to catch a marlin, let alone catch the same one you caught a week before.
Did they let him go the second time?
They did. They put another tag in him and then let him go. So,
that goes back to my question earlier. You'd think these fish would learn.
I know it. They don't. They're
just
they
not
hungry,
that intelligent, I guess.
Yeah, and they get hungry, and they'll hit just about anything.
But do you have any stories about just sheer stupidity? I mean, like a fisherman, I don't know, maybe he battles a long time and it ends up he doesn't have a fish or something.
I do, and there's a couple of them. One of them is over there off of Massachusetts, and there was a group of anglers out fishing, and it was very, very foggy, and they were out after these giant bluefin tuna, and these bluefin tuna can get up to well over 1,000 pounds, and of course there's not many of them left out there. They've been exploited, but they do get very, very big, and these anglers are out there fishing and trolling along, and they suddenly get this enormous strike, and the reel is zinging, and they've got a hookup, and the angler gets down in the chair and starts fighting this big fish, and the fight goes on for about 4 hours before the fog lifts, and the current was very, very strong, and the tide had changed, and they were able to get close to this fish they had hooked up to, and suddenly it got clear enough, and they could see out there that they were actually snagged to a lobster pot.
Oh, no.
And they had hooked up, they were trolling along, and they snagged onto the buoy, and they were fighting nothing but a lobster trap for 4 hours.
I'm surprised you got these guys to corroborate that story.
I sure did. And there was another group that was out there fishing, again, fog, and it's nighttime, and they're coming back in after a long day. And when you come into a harbor at night, the harbor entrance is lit up by red lights and green lights. And so they're coming on in, and they see the red light, and they see the green light, and they see the red light, and they see the green light, and up on they come, and suddenly they wash up on shore, and there's surf casters next to them, and it turns out that they were actually following street lights along a street that was along the ocean there.
Oh, no.
Actually washed, but they were okay. Nobody was hurt, but not what they wanted to happen.
That's exactly right. Now, do you have time to take some phone calls?
Absolutely, sure.
Okay, it's kind of interesting when we have somebody like you that has just a mind-boggling stories upon story upon story. Our phone lines get a little blank because everybody's busy listening. Let's start out with Muncie, Indiana, and Rod. Hello, you're on the air with Jerry Pippin and Sean Morey.
Hello, Jerry.
How are you?
Good. Tell me a good walleye lake in either Minnesota or International Falls, north of International Falls in Canada.
Sean, did you hear that?
Yes, I did, and I don't have a walleye story, but I'm working on...
I don't need a walleye story. I need a lake that knows
good
walleyes.
I get it. Rod wants to go fishing, and he wants to find out where the best fishing is.
You
deal in that?
You got it.
Rod, give me, I'm going to have to check into it. I've got a pretty good network out there, and I can get you to probably the best walleye lake fishing up in that whole area here if you give me about 20 minutes this afternoon. So leave your number, and I'll get back to you here this afternoon and let you know.
Is that going to be fast enough for you, Rod?
Yep.
Okay, thanks for listening. Okay, let's go to Blaine in Stuart, Florida. You're on the air with Jerry Pippin and Sean Morey. Hello, Blaine.
Yes, I have a
incident about a fishing rod related to the fish story.
Hey, great, great, Sean. Blaine has a fishing story for us.
Blaine, let's hear it. I'd like to hear it. Sounds good.
Well, it involves a fishing rod rather than a fishing story, but it's connected with fishing. I'm a offshore fisherman. I fish for marlin, tuna, and sailfish. Had my own boat. And one day I had a friend of mine aboard who is a local tire dealer. Now, it's important to know what his occupation is because of the story. And he brought along a brand new trolling rod that he just had custom wrapped at the local rod shop, had a new Shimano reel on it, and had a dolphin embroidered into the rod, very fancy and so forth. And he used it that day. And coming in that evening, the inlet was bad, meaning there was a good groundswell, or what we call a ground heave. And he was washing his rod in the cockpit of the boat with fresh water prior to coming to our dock at home here. And the boat lurched, and the rod flew out of his hands and overboard. So this gentleman lost his brand new rod and reel. Okay. About 18 months later, a customer came into his shop, his tire shop, and wanted an estimate on some new tires. And they said, well, okay, let's look in your trunk and see how the spare is, because we'll know whether we want to rotate that into the system or leave it as a spare. We looked in the man's trunk. He saw an encrusted fishing rod. He looked a little further, and he told the man, he said, I lost that fishing rod about a year and a half ago. He said, well, he said a friend of mine was out in the ocean fishing near the inlet, and he snagged it up, and he knew I was a fisherman, so he gave it to me. So this friend of mine proceeded to identify. See, now there's a little dolphin embroidered on there, and he scraped off with his fingernail the encrustment, and there was a dolphin. But the end of the story is he didn't get the fishing rod back, and he didn't even sell the man a set of tires.
Wow. Finders keepers, and no business either.
I just thought that was pretty good.
That's one of those remarkable odd stories. That's terrific. I love it. I love it. That's a great story, Glenn. I'm going to want to talk to you further on. Yeah, that's a great story. I want to know why he didn't get his rod back. Maybe we can eventually get it back for him. He could frame that. That's terrific.
Okay, good enough.
Thank you, Blaine.
Thanks for listening, Blaine. Appreciate it.
You know, Jerry, I was thinking about the East Coast stories over there, and there's a great story out of Charleston, South Carolina, and there was a couple of guys walking along the beach, and they were walking their dog. They were out on Sullivan's Island there off of Charleston.
Yeah, I know about it. Nice island.
Yes, yes. And they were throwing a stick out, and the dog was going out into the waves and grabbing the stick and bringing it back in. And they threw the stick out, and the dog went out in the water when suddenly this fin popped up in the surf. And one of the guys thought it was a shark, and his dog's out there in the water. And he decides that he's going to be one of these courageous, brave guys and go chasing out there and beat the shark off and save his dog. So he goes running out into the water. And figuring that that the shark's about ready to bite his dog. And it's pretty shallow for a ways out there, so he could get out there maybe 50, 60 feet, and it was up to about his waist. And when he got out there, he realized that it wasn't a shark fin, and it sort of looked like he thought maybe it was a sailfish or something. And so he's standing there, and his dog is over next to him, and this fish swims right by him, not even paying attention to him because it's eating what turns out to be a school of bait. And as it swims by him, he reaches out with his bare hands and grabs this fish by the tail. And the fish goes crazy and jumps up in the air and pulls him underwater, and they get into a wrestling match there in the surf. And he holds on and manages to back up and pull this fish all the way back through the surf and drags him up on the beach and throws him up in the sand dunes. And it turns out to be about a 40-pound short-billed spearfish, which is in the billfish family. It's like a small sailfish, and it was the first one ever caught in South Carolina waters, and it had never been done before, and it was done by hand.
That's true to say, and no bait involved. I guess the dog was the bait.
Dog was the bait. Billfish by hand.
Wow. And you verified that, huh?
Oh, yeah, verified and everything. I talked to his buddy.
I'm Jerry Pippin. Sean's out in Sausalito, California, right past the Golden Gate Bridge here. They still fish in the San Francisco Bay?
Yeah, they sure do. In fact, there's a local story in the book. The largest freshwater fish ever caught on rod and reel happened just off the bay in the Carquina Strait, it's called up here, and it was a 468-pound sturgeon. And they've since put limits on how big of a fish you can catch, and that record may stand forever. You never know.
Right, because if they got a bigger one, it'd definitely be illegal. So
yeah, they stop them for breeding purposes, and the older fish tend to help the populations along, so they don't want you killing the real big fish. And oftentimes, the biggest fish are the females anyway. in most fishing, most fish. So
that's interesting. That's a, case in a lot of the animal kingdom.
Yes.
The fish kingdom.
Yes, it sure is.
Mm-hmm.
It sure is. And so it's nice to know that the big marlin, the thousand-pounders in Australia are being let go. Most of them are females, and most of them probably have babies in there. So that certainly is helping.
Now, your book is Incredible Fishing Stories.
Just looking here at some fish trivia, and one shark's belly had 47 buttons, 3 leather belts, and 9 shoes all inside of his belly.
I hope there weren't feet in those shoes.
I hope not.
Now, sharks will eat anything, won't they?
You know, they sure will. It was very fun looking for fish trivia, and I listed here, there's actually another shark was caught and had a raincoat, 3 overcoats, and a car's license plate in its stomach. And then my most favorite is the 22-foot-long shark that was caught in the Mediterranean Sea, and in its belly was the headless body of a man wearing a full suit of armor. And that's sort of a famous one that's been known for quite some time, but I still like that one, I can imagine.
I wonder what happened to the fellow's head.
He was probably...
He was thrown in?
He was beheaded and thrown in and probably sat down there in the bottom of the Mediterranean, and one of these enormous sharks came by and scooped him up and had him for dinner. And it was still in its belly when they caught this shark, so...
I wonder, that would really give you an acute case of indigestion with the armor on.
It sure would. Those sharks, they can eat anything, and they often do. They're tough.